Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Ethan, take out the trash sacks. Is this a reference to your vintage cube strategy these days?
Because my decks are all in the dumpster. Is that why?
Yeah, I mean, by self-admitted, I watched you trophy with Luris. As far as I'm concerned, you're 3-0 in vintage cube.
That's true. Yeah, all I needed was Twitch chat to help me out. Oh man, I am. Have you played any of this version of the vintage cube?
I've played a fair amount. Yeah.
Oh boy.
I mean, not like a ton, but I've done like four drafts, maybe.
I'm terrible at it. Though I feel like I'm maybe turning in things around. I do love the Goyfs. I like the Goyf life.
Pyrogoyf is sexy.
Pyrogoyf is sexy. Yeah, but a Pyrogoyf, that's cheating. I want my little Tarmogoyf doing stuff. Psychic Frog is pretty good.
Psychic Frog is nuts in the Midge Cube. I mean, it's just nuts in general, but it's especially nuts in the Midge Cube. But we're here to talk about Bloomburrow. Don't worry, this isn't a Cube podcast.
Don't worry, folks.
Ethan, if you were an animal,
oh no,
which animal would you be?
No, thank you. I'll pass. I'll pass. You have an answer for this question?
I do. I would be an owl. That's my standard answer.
Why?
Because they're wise and they're cool. They get to fly. Creatures of the night. Top of the food chain in the bird world. Like, you're running down, scooping up some mice, having a snack around midnight. Sounds like a good life.
In college, we had to do, like, freshman year acting, there's this, like, big culmination of the end of the first semester, I think, is, and it's called the Animal Project. And you have to, like, pick an animal that is the opposite of you. And you, like, embody
what did you
it
choose?
And then an elephant is what I chose, is because they're like just very slow and plodding, and that is
and you had to embody
me.
An elephant. How did you channel your inner elephant?
I can show you pics.
I'll to see this. Can we get them in the YouTube video?
Maybe I'll dig them up and put them in the YouTube video. We'll see if we can get them there. I thought we were focusing on Bloomburrow and not.
Oh, we are. That's
that was the segue. Are you? I know, like, you were very excited about Strixhaven and the flavor of that. Are you? Where are you at with little cute furry animals?
I'm into it. I mean, I'm not like over the moon jazzed about it or anything, but that was like that interview question was an RA interview question in life. I worked in residence life in college.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the Redwall books as a kid. Like, it seems on those lines. I mean,
and it's got like,
it feels magic-y also. Like, it doesn't just feel like, I don't know, Assassin's Creed or whatever. Like, it's flavorful.
And maybe it's just the typal nature of the set, but it does feel a little like the art and stuff, even the set symbol is giving me like some Lorwyn vibes. Is that like on purpose? Do you know? Like, feels a little Lorwyn-y to me.
No idea, but I was on hiatus. Lorwyn was not a set. I maybe drafted it once. It was not when I was super into Magic.
So yeah, we are here for previews. I can't believe it. I mean, obviously I can because we did 50 takes last week and here we are and there's a lot of cards to talk about. So we're doing preview season for Bloomborough. So we're going to look at as many commons or uncommons as we can. I mean, not really as many as we can because a lot have been previewed, but we're going to look at a fair number of them. We'll certainly look at a lot of the signpost common and uncommons and see what we can't figure out about what's going on in the format. And of course, end things with my favorite segment of perhaps our entire show. Greater garbage. But before we get into any of that, we'll chat briefly about the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free, but we have some great perks via the Patreon, and the Discord is what everybody who gives back via the Patreon gets access to, and it is the place to be. A lot of great stuff happening there, especially around preview season, especially around high stakes limited events like Arena Opens or Arena Championship qualifiers or the Winnabox stuff. Like, there's just a lot of great ways to interact with folks via the Discord. We're going to have practice drafts coming out once the full set is dropped, and those were popping off for MH3, so I'm hoping they're going to be popping off as well for Bloomborough. And of course, we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they joined. So this week, we're welcoming Justin, Joe, Chris, Secret Nerd Dad, Morgan, Rylan, The Schmello, Ben, J-Pot, Lexa, DeWitt, George, Matthew, Nix, and Will. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, can I say thank you enough, especially to that Ben just up in the score, just running up the score.
Wow.
Against the Ethans. You love to see it. And seriously, these folks know what's up. They're getting in on new set time, and you should be as well before the crash course and Bloomborough drops.
Let's chat mechanics. We have, you know how they say every mechanic is just like secret kicker? We basically
we have one that is actually kicker.
Yeah, we have one that's actually kicker. It's called Offspring. It's a new keyword found on creature cards that is an optional cost you can pay as you cast the card. If you do pay the cost when the creature enters the battlefield, when the creature enters.
So tilting. I was so tilting because, first of all, I just like flows for me. I sound
you
like
hate,
old man
you hate
yelling
change.
At clouds.
Yeah,
I do hate change. Yes, that also. But the cards still say leave the battlefield. Like, the battlefield's still around. Leaves the battlefield is still printed on cards in this format. What?
Yeah.
Can we just keep the battlefield? I like having a battlefield.
Do you say mana value now?
Yes.
Yeah. You're gonna say enters.
No. No. Okay. I say mana value because of content creation. ETB, that's where it's at.
ETB is, yeah, that makes sense. So when the creature ETBs, you create a token that's a copy of it, except the token is a 1/1. So for example, we have Steampath Charger, 1 red, 2/1. When this creature dies, it deals 1 damage to target player and it has Offspring 2. So you can pay 2 extra mana when you cast it. So it'd be 4 mana for a 2/1 plus a 1/1 that both have that when it dies, deals a damage to target player text.
It's going to be real annoying facing down that card when you're at a low life total trying to stabilize.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And notice I put myself in the position of defending because that's where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
Next mechanic is gift. This is a new keyword that's an optional cost that you can pay as you cast the card. If you gift your opponent something, you get a bigger effect from your card. And there are several different types of gifts you can give. You can gift a card where your opponent draws a card. You can gift a tapped fish where they create a 1/1 tapped fish token. And you can also gift a food where they get a food token that they can sacrifice to gain 3 life. So, for example, we've got Parting Gust, white-white for an instant, uncommon. You gift a tapped fish. So if you do give them a gift, they get a 1/1 tapped blue fish as you cast the spell. And Parting Gust says, exile target non-token creature. If the gift wasn't promised, return that creature to the battlefield under its owner's control with a +1/+1 counter on it at the beginning of the next end step. So if you gift the fish, you get the thing gone forever. Otherwise, it's a blink return with a +1/+1 counter that you would presumably use to save your own creature.
That's an interesting little split card there. Yeah, cool. Next up, we have Forage, a new keyword action that requires you to either exile 3 cards from your graveyard or sacrifice a food token. Kind of interesting that that's like at odds, or at least the exile 3 cards from your graveyard stuff is at odds a little bit with a returning mechanic called Threshold, which cares about having 7 or more cards in your graveyard. A lot, there's some overlap there. But this one, you can either do that or sack a food token. So what's an example card here?
We've got Treetop Sentries, 3 and a green for a 2/4 reach at common. It's a squirrel archer. And whenever it enters, you may forage. If you do, draw a card. So giant spider's back, plus potentially drawing a card. Is that good enough? I mean, I love me a giant spider.
It seems good enough. Yeah, I feel like I'm prone to liking like high toughness reach creatures. So yes, I don't know. It just depends how much like I feel like it's more about how much food or incidental food you'll have, because by turn four, you're not going to have three cards in your yard, probably, to exile.
Well, if you cast the impulse card, you are. There's a Malevolent yeah. Rumble's back, baby.
Squirrel Rumble. And yeah, you reading off the types for Treetop Sentries reminded me that we're going to need to be doing that a little bit here, because types matter. This is a creature typal set.
Sort of, but it's not like Ixalan, where you're going to have to like be merfolk and pray and cross your fingers after pick three, I don't think. They're just our light typal bonuses sprinkled throughout. And like one of the cool things we'll get to in the removal is there's some removal spells that clearly slot into an otter deck, or some removal spells that clearly slot into a wolverine deck, or not wolverine, raccoon, one of those animals, you know. Sonic's not in the wait, Sonic's a hedgehog, never mind.
Wow, we are
just doing terribly,
bebopping
here
and scatting all over the animal kingdom.
All right, that takes us on to our next mechanic, which is a Valiant, which is a new ability word for triggered abilities that occur whenever a creature becomes the target of a spell or ability you control for the first time each turn. We've got Heartfire Hero. What's going on there?
It's a single red for a 1/1. When it becomes the target of a spell or ability you control for the first time each turn, put a ++1 counter on it. We're just going to shortcut that to Valiant in the future. So this is Valiant, put a counter on it. And when it dies, it deals damage equal to its power to each opponent. I am very excited about this mechanic, mostly as a selfish thing, because I feel like this will finally teach me about how to draft combat tricks appropriately. Because I feel like I just like drastically underrate them usually, and this is finally going to give me like a real incentive to do it, and I feel like it's going to teach me about combat tricks. Plus, I think like the red-white prowess constructed decks are kind of cool, and this feels like you'll be able to actually kind of draft a version of that.
Yeah, this looks very supported so far.
Yes,
for sure.
Agree. Lastly, we have Expend, which is a new rules term that tracks how much mana you've spent to cast spells over the course of a turn. Expend 4, for example, would trigger when you spend your fourth mana to cast a spell. And that's all I've seen so far is Expend 4, but maybe there are different variable numbers. So here we have Bark Knuckle Boxer, 1 on a green for a 3/2 Raccoon Berserker. Whenever you expend 4, it gains indestructible until end of turn.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things is it's not spending mana in chunks of 4 that you're going to have to watch out for. It's literally your fourth mana. So like much like in Modern Horizons 3, drawing your third card each turn, like there were a couple times I played a lot more blue-black the past week, and I've messed up sequencing to where like, oops, I accidentally drew my third card before I'm doing this other thing, even though I'm drawing two more cards. And I think you're going to have to watch out for that with this deck, with Expend 4, because it's literally your fourth mana spent. So it's not like you played a 2-drop and then played a 4-drop that you want. I mean, I guess you will still trigger it then as you cast your fourth mana, but maybe it's foolproof. I don't know. red trickily to me.
Yeah. But notably, it's not for like activated abilities. You can't like do that. It can't be like, oh, I cast a 3-drop and then spent one mana on an activated ability. That won't count.
Correct. But for example, Steam Path Charger, our offspring card with a pseudo kicker. Mm-hmm. If you do that and you pay its offspring cost, that will count as expending your fourth mana casting a spell.
Yeah. And we actually, look, we mentioned Threshold. We mentioned via Forage that food is back. So we also have some returning mechanics as well. And we also have all 10 signposts, uncommon and common. Is that true?
All true and pretty clear about what each archetype is doing. It kind of feels, I can't decide if this feels like Modern Horizons 3 Lite to me or if it feels Corset Plus. Like, I think it feels Corset Plus personally, but maybe that's just coming off of Modern Horizons 3. The big question I have right now is, and we'll see this from the signpost cards, like pretty clear lanes. And as we get into cards, pretty clear cards that go in each deck. We've not seen any fixing previewed yet. And if there's no fixing, it's going to be like pretty tough to get some bleed going on, I think.
Get in a lane, stay in a lane type deal. Yeah. Let's check out the 10 color pairs. First up, we have Blue-White Birds, which is flyers helping creatures without flying. This first card is an absolute banger. Plume Creed Mentor is 1 white blue for a 2/3 Bird Scout at uncommon. It's a flyer. And when it or another creature you control with flying enters, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control without flying. So 2-drop without flying into this dumps a counter on your 2-drop.
Well, and imagine it's a 2-drop mouse that then you trigger Valiant with to like give it a +1/+1 counter. Like birds and mice want to go hand in hand together. They're thick as thieves.
That is hot. Yeah, I'm into that.
All right, now we're on to the blue-white common, where there's a cycle of hybrid casting cost commons for each color pair. So this is blue-whites. It's Seed Pod Squire, 3 and a hybrid Azorius mana for a 3/3 bird at common. It's got flying, and whenever it attacks, target creature you control without flying gets +1/+1 until end of turn. Again, it's going to be busted with mice. Like you're going to put this in red
way.
Yeah, it's a repeatable way without, you know, tons of combat tricks to trigger Valiant.
That's one thing. When was the last set where we saw hybrid mana cost commons?
It was Murders at Carlock Manor, the Morph Disguise, excuse me. Dollar the Swear Jar.
Thank you. Dollar the Swear Jar, creatures only enter. In that, like going into that set, I think we thought a lot of those were going to be really high picks. Dogwalker ended up being, and I know, sorry to bring up, you know, your most hated card of the format. Dogwalker ended up being like, you know, really a huge cut above the rest. But then like figuring out like which ones were high picks because of their flexibility and which ones weren't, I think the same thing is going to be kind of true here. And you make a really good point about like, yeah, this is white blue, but maybe this is even more desired by white. A red white deck. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Moving on to blue black rats. That's where Threshold happens, which is 7 or more cards in graveyards. What's going on with the uncommon?
Uncommon is Tidecaller Mentor. This is 1 blue black for a 3/3 rat with menace. It's got Threshold. Whenever it enters, if 7 or more cards are in your graveyard, return up to 1 target non-land permanent to its owner's hand.
3 mana, 3/3 menace on curve, and then later in the game, if you can enable this, a Gravedigger of sorts?
Yeah, but a little bit at odds with itself in that presumably to get Threshold, you're going to want to be controlling, and this is a bit more of an aggressive
as a menace.
Tempo type card.
Yeah, I'm not excited about that card or the common, really, which is Mind Drill Assailant. It's 2 Dimir hybrid for a 2/5. Its threshold is it gets +3/+0. So if you have threshold, it's a 5/5. And you could pay 2 and a Dimir hybrid to surveil 1.
You're not into a Wishcoin Crab plus?
No, I'm not. Should I be?
I think so. I think this card is powerful. I mean, it's not like a crazy high pick or anything, but it's going to be annoying. It's going to slow the game down and then helps you get to Threshold and then beats down later. I mean, there's a lot to like about this card.
Okay. You're medium selling me on it.
It's like a C. It's fine. You're going to play it. Can't wait till next week. I just felt a disturbance in the force. That one comment. Ooh, it's going to be juicy.
Because I was just like, that is not a C, but I'm just...
I know, that's why.
Tilting off the face of the earth right now.
It's glee.
Thank you very much.
We're going to have a Lords of Limited team meeting prior to recording the Crash Course next week. Don't worry, folks.
Must do. Yeah, that'll be bonus Patreon content. It's an hour of us yelling about letter grades to each other. Next up is Red Black Lizards, which cares about your opponents losing life this turn. The uncommon is Fireglass Mentor, black red for a 2/1 lizard warlock. At the beginning of your second main phase, if an opponent lost life this turn, exile the top 2 cards of your library. Choose 1 of them. Until end of turn, you may play that card.
I mean, this is good if you're doing well. It's not it's not great if you're not doing well.
They couldn't have made it like a 2/2.
It's a little understated.
I do not like that card.
I mean, but if you have... I mean, it is more of a card advantage, don't run out of gas engine, than it is an aggressive card. But that's weird because the deck wants to be aggressive. But if it were both, it would probably be a little too pushed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
The common is Cindering Cutthroat, 2 and Arakdos hybrid mana. For a 3/2 lizard, it enters with a +1/+1 counter on it if an opponent lost life this turn, and it's got the ability 1 and Arakdos hybrid mana to give it menace until end of turn.
Yeah, I mean, fine. That's a lot to give menace. I don't know, like, it's a lot of mana. Like, you can't
it's
just
a lot of mana to give menace, but if you're doing it, presumably you would like to spend 2 mana to push 4 damage or 5 damage or whatever.
But here's my, like, yeah, I guess that's true. I just like all of the if you're doing it stuff is like, yeah, then you're doing it. And these like incidental bonus, I mean, getting a whole card for the 2/1 is big, but like you're dealing them damage. So like you're already doing well. Is this?
Yeah, this yeah. card is this card's fine.
It's a C, right?
Yeah, exactly. You get it.
I get it.
Next, we've got Red Green Raccoons. I don't think anyone else finds this entertaining but us. Next is Red Green Raccoons, which is expending 4. First up, we've got the uncommon, which is Wander Tail Mentor. This is red green for a 2/2 raccoon. I feel like I'm saying that word weird.
Raccoon. I also feel like you're saying
weird. All right, we didn't make it very far in this episode, folks. We lost Ethan.
I just thought it was like an Indiana thing. Like,
how do you say raccoon?
Raccoon.
like I just said.
Yeah.
So we've got Wandertail Mentor, which is a 2/2 at uncommon. It's a raccoon. It's going to crush me this whole segment. Whenever you expend 4, you put a +1/+1 counter on Wandertail Mentor, and it taps to add a red or a green. This is one. I'm not excited about raccoons as a deck, but this is one that at least works with itself and does the thing.
Yeah, right. Like, this is, it comes down on 2. You play a couple things, and then all of a sudden, this is a 4/4.
No, the next turn. Well, sure, next, sure.
Right, you know, like, because you're going to, like, use it. Like, that. Like, I'm talking
use
about,
it,
like,
use once it, you, and then start beating.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the common is Junkblade Bruiser. It's 3 Gruul hybrid for a 4/5 with Trample. And whenever you expend 4, it gets +2/+1 until end of turn. Fine. Like, I'm less excited about that. But yeah, Wandertail Mentor is interesting. I keep trying to think of, like, how do you, abuse isn't the right word, but, like, is there anything to be done with this mechanic? Are you drafting 4 drops more? Are you, like,
or maybe 2s and maybe 2s and 4s, right? 3 is one to avoid potentially, because 2/2s also gets you to expend 4.
Okay. So you do want to think about, like, the casting call, like, just being able to spend 4.
Think about the mana value.
The mana value, not the casting cost. Thank you. Green White Rabbits is next, which is go wide and or tall. Move over, what was it called? The rare from Wilds of Eldraine?
Regal Bunnicorn?
Regal Bunnicorn, thank you. This is Burrowguard Mentor, green white for a star trample, and its power and toughness are equal to the number of creatures you control. Get big.
Get big. That card's going to be scary.
And you know how it's going to get big?
The common here, which is Head of the Homestead. Mama's got a frying pan. This is 3 Selesnya. So 3/2 rabbit, a common, and whenever it enters, you create 2 1/1 rabbit creature tokens.
Yeah. This card rules.
Card's excellent.
Yeah. Solid C right there.
Got him. All right. That takes us on to black-white bats. This is not helpful content at all. Takes us on to black-white bats, which cares about whether or not you gained or lost life this turn. The uncommon is Starseer Mentor. 3 white-black for an uncommon. It's 3/5 bat. It's got flying and vigilance. At the beginning of your end step, if you gained or lost life this turn, target opponent loses 3 life unless they sacrifice a non-land permanent or discard a card. My favorite text in Magic.
Is that real? Do you love the Punisher stuff?
Not Punisher, but this. Like, Torment of Scarabs? Sign me up, baby.
Wow.
Love those HOU days.
The common is a sweet enabler. It's Moonrise Cleric. 1 Orzhov hybrid for a 2/3 flyer. And when it attacks, you gain a life. This card is really good, I think.
Both of those cards are really good. I wasn't done gushing about Starseer Mentor yet. This is huge. 3/5 flying vigilance?
Yo, yeah. The body on, like, I'm much more excited about that than I am about the.
But it's all upside.
It's all so upside good. For sure. But yeah, 5 mana, 3/5 flying vigilance is a brick wall.
And Moonrise Cleric, very good too, and going to enable all your stuff on your turn. It's going to be really strong, I think. And in addition to just being an intrinsically good card.
Mm-hmm, right.
It takes us on to Blue-Red Otters, which is Prowess and Spells Matter. The uncommon here is Stormcatch Mentor. It's blue, red for a 1/1 otter. It's got haste and prowess, and instant and sorcery spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. A little nerfed.
From haste. What? From Goblin, what is it, Electromancer?
I just wish it were a 2/2.
That's a lot. 2/2 haste, prowess, and make your spells cheaper?
Yeah, maybe.
A lot. I think that's, but, that's,
you know,
much.
I love some blue red.
Feels, I know you do. You're going to be very excited. This is what blue red's just doing, what blue red normally does. And we've got a Spellgorger weird variant at common, Tempest Angler. 1 is it hybrid for a 2/2 otter wizard. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you put a +1/+1 counter on Tempest Angler.
Yeah. super solid card. A C, probably.
Probably. There we go.
Takes us on to green black squirrels, which cares about foraging. So first up, we've got the uncommon, which is Vine Reap Mentor, black green for a 3/2 squirrel. And whenever it enters or dies, you make a food token. This is a real good card. Yeah, this card's really good.
Yeah, really good card there. And plays really nicely with Corpseberry Cultivator, the common. One Golgari Golgari hybrid for a 2/3, so 3-mana 2/3. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you may forage. And whenever you forage, put a +/+1 counter on Corpseberry Cultivator. So not only, like, this can obviously forage. But
you really want to forage with other things.
Right. Other instances of forage that you are able to do are going to just be able to dump counters on this, which is kind of sweet. Like incidental food, like Vine Reap Mentor, like just have it like Vine Reap Mentor on 2, and then you get to play the Giant Spider on 4. Imagine that curve. This into the common hybrid into the spider. You're drawing a card. Your 3 drop is now a 3/4.
Yeah. Feels good.
Is black green going to like get to do something?
I like black green. That's why I have questions for you when we're done with this. So red white mice is up next, which is Valiant Beatdown. The uncommon here is Seed Glaive Mentor. This is one red white for a 3/2 mouse with vigilance and haste. And it says whenever it becomes the target of a spell or ability you control for the first time each turn, put a +1/+1 counter on it.
And the common is Veteran Guard Mouse, 3 red-white hybrid for a 3/4, and it has Valiant. It gets +1/+0, and first strike until end of turn, scry 1. I take umbrage with a 4-mana 3/4 mouse. That's a big mouse.
It's Gus. Gus. It's a big guy.
Okay. Your questions are once we're done, right?
Once we're done, yeah. But okay. Mice look pushed. I mean, so far, maybe we've just seen a lot of the mice, but the mice have a very good rate. Like, I think red-white's going to be a scary deck.
And lastly, we have blue-green frogs, which is wheel spinning dot deck. It's blink/ETB. Lily Splash Mentor is the uncommon. 2 green-blue for a 4/4 with reach. You can pay 1 green-blue to exile another target creature you control, then return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a +/+1 counter on it. Activate only as a sorcery.
Yeah, I mean, good stats. If you're stable, you're going to be able to spend time wheel spinning, activating that ability.
Mm-hmm.
Next is Pond Prophet. This is the common. It's Simic hybrid for a 1/1 frog, and whenever it enters, draw a card.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's pretty cute. I mean, I know it's been said already, but that frogs doing bounce stuff is pretty flavorful. I'm a little dubious of, like, all of the pick up your own stuff, but I think Pond Prophet is going to be a pretty key piece, I would think, of that, to like have something to pick up.
Yeah, hard for that to be a bad card.
Yeah,
also sure. Just in general.
All right,
okay, so we've been through all 10 of these. Mm-hmm. What do you like, which ones seem the most powerful to you, if you had to pick out a few that stand out as like the uncommon and the common really get there, and as a result feel like this is maybe potentially going to be a good archetype? And I assume we'll go into this a little bit more in the crash course, but just curious to get your gut reaction here.
Maybe it's like recency bias, but I'm looking at this list and I feel like I like a lot of the later ones that we looked at. I'm not particularly jazzed about the red white common, but I think red white mice and that sort of Valiant Beatdown life looks well supported based on the other cards that have been previewed. So I will say the things I'm looking forward to are red white, green black with forage, blue red. I think both of those spells matter. Cards seem like they're like doing the thing, and black white gain or lost life based on just like how good of an enabler / just card the common is and how much of a house the 3/5 vigilance flyer is.
For me, I think similar. I really like the look of blue white birds, red white mice. Like those two stand out pretty far to me. I don't like blue-black rats, don't love red-black lizards, don't love red-green raccoons. I do really like green-white rabbits. I think both those cards get there, like as in terms of a 1/2 punch with the uncommon and the common really looking good and complementary. Also really like black-white bats in that sense too. I'm actually not so hot on blue-red otters, and I do really like, I'm hoping green-black squirrels gets there too. I think it's got potential, but it's a little odd in that, like, one of the things blue-white birds and red-white mice have going for them is they're just a lot of good cards on good rates, and their mechanics incentivize you to be doing things you already want to be doing.
Right.
in games of Magic, squirrels is a little more finicky.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
You gotta find the squirrel. You gotta bury the. You gotta find the nut. Bury the nut. Get it back up. It's a lot of effort there.
Yeah, there's a lot of work. Gotta work for it. Let's take a look at what removal has been spoiled so far, and there have been some doozies. First up, we have Repel Calamity. 1W for an instant. Destroy target creature with power or toughness 4 or greater. What's your very early takes? Are you main decking this card?
Yeah, I think this is enough to get me to main deck it.
Okay.
And I'm sure you'll tell me whether or not I should in the crash course next week.
I will be telling you.
Next up, we've got Sugarcoat, 2W for an uncommon with flash. It's an aura. It says enchant creature or food. Enchant a permanent as a colorless food artifact with 2 tap, sack it, gain 3 life, and loses all other card types and abilities. Very flavorful. Love
Very
that.
Flavorful, for sure. Three mana? I don't know. 3 mana is a lot. What do you think? What's your take on this?
It's a C.
Great. It's a good bit. It plays. Next up, we have our preview card, or one of our two preview cards, Consumed by Greed, 1BB for an instant. Target opponent sacks a creature with the greatest power among creatures they control. And if the gift was promised, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. And this has the option to gift a card.
This is excellent.
Is it?
Yes. It's 3 mana, kill presumably their best thing. I mean, you just have to assume that if you're talking about greatest power. And then if you have a bomb in your graveyard, you get your bomb and they get a random card?
Yeah, I mean, there's like slight awkwardness with this card because you don't actually get to choose the thing you want to kill, you know?
Yeah,
like if they have like
there's
two...
a potential. Yes, there's a potential that this is not premium, but you're always running it. And the gift is actually a real upside
right,
on this card.
Right.
Whereas gift on some cards is like, whatever. Like they just tacked gift onto this card because, like, presumably gift is a seated multiplayer mechanic for Commander, right? It's not really a true limited mechanic.
Yeah, no, but this one is particularly very interesting because, sure, you like gifting your opponent a full card isn't ideal, but you're like, you get a random card and I'm getting back this
a B or a B
very
plus
specific
or an A
threat. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure.
And you don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's optional. Next is Early Winter. This is 4W for an instant, a common. Choose one, exile target creature, or target opponent exiles an enchantment they control. A little clunky.
Clunky black removal is back, but also cheap black removal is back with Fel. 1W sorcery, destroy target creature.
I mean, it's great. You're never cutting it. Sorcery is a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
Next is Conduct Electricity, 4W for an instant. And it deals 6 damage to target creature and 2 damage up to 1 target creature token. Again, clunky, hoping to not run this.
Hoping to run the next one. Take out the trash. 1W instant. Deal 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker. If you control a raccoon, you may discard a card. If you do, draw a card.
Yeah, I mean, this is one that's nice where like every red deck is playing this, but a nice bonus for the raccoon deck.
For sure.
Next is Longstalk Brawl, which is green for a sorcery. You gift a tapped fish at common. And choose target creature you control and target creature you don't control. Put a +1/+1 counter on the creature you control if the gift was promised, and then those creatures fight each other. So either prey upon, or if you gift a fish, hunt the weak for 1 mana, which is also pretty bonkers.
Yeah.
Again, this is a really powerful one that I like quite a bit. Like, you're willing to give your opponent a 1/1 if you just need to get the thing dead without your big threat.
Exactly. That flexibility is nice. Well, and that it's a permanent counter too. And so that, like, not only are you using that counter to kill the thing, but then you get that counter presumably for future turns to take advantage of having a larger creature now.
Yep.
Next is Polywallop. 3 and a green for an instant, costs 1 less to cast for each frog you control. Target creature you control deals damage equal to twice its power to target creature you don't control. This is pretty sweet. Like,
yeah, this is a cool spell because, like, frogs get it generally because it's really not good. Like, it's really inefficient for other decks.
Right.
But it's hyper efficient for a blue-green deck.
Yeah, like, single green, deal twice damage.
I mean, and this is the type of thing where, you know, the type of thing we were talking about with, you know, just trying to predict what's going to happen in a format where we were looking at which commons and uncommons stand out to us. Like, this card existing single-handedly is going to power up frogs as an archetype.
Right.
Because not many other archetypes can take advantage of it.
Right. And so in theory, you can get them late.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you can see this 7th, 8th, maybe on the wheel. Maybe the wheel is alive with Polywallop and, like, that's a really great spot to be. When you're getting a premium removal spell for your deck, when you're blue-green frogs, that's really cool.
Yeah. Next, that takes us on to just some categories of cards that are going to fit into, you know, what we've seen decks wanting to do based on the gold uncommons. So first, we're going to take a look at Valiant cards. So these are some cards that are going to trigger Valiant. We've got Bravekin Duo up first. This is white for a 1-1 at common. It's a rabbit. And it says one tap, target creature. Oh, it's a rabbit mouse. Excuse me. It's both. Two clans playing both sides.
Wow.
One tap, target. That was my Sean Connery there.
I was like, what is this reference?
One tap, target creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. Activate only as a sorcery.
This is great, right?
Yes. Well, is it? It's a little mana intensive.
I mean, I guess it's a little mana intensive. A repeatable way to trigger Valiant seems great.
Yeah, this is probably great.
Next up, these cantrips are so good. So Feather of Flight, one and a white for an aura with flash. It's an uncommon. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card, and enchanted creature gets +1/+0 and has flying.
Yeah, combat trick, Valiant, love it all.
Yeah.
This card's excellent. I mean, don't do it in open mana, but very, very powerful card.
Yeah.
Next up, speaking of tricks, we've got Mabel's Metal. One and a white for an uncommon instant. Target creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn. Up to one other target creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. This is going to be a mythic uncommon in red white. This is broken in red white.
It feels like it's going to be impossible to mess with red white in combat. Like, I'm just so scared.
Red white looks tough.
Yeah. Next is Thistle Down Players. Two and a white for a 3/3 mouse bard at common. And when it attacks, untap target non-land permanent. Hey, that's a way to trigger Valiant.
Yeah, so you're just going to attack and then get Valiant on attacks, which is pretty nice. Next up, we've got Finch Formation. This is two and a blue for a 2/2 with offspring 3. It's got flying, and it says when this creature enters, target creature you control gains flying until end of turn. So potentially jumping two other creatures into the air, two other Valiant mice. No, you don't like it?
That's a lot of mana. Six mana.
Six mana to win the game. Sounds great.
Yeah, but at the cost, I don't know. This card is, I don't want to keep doing the C joke, but this card is not very, I'm not very excited about this card. Next up is Brambleguard Captain. Three and a red for a 2/3 mouse soldier at uncommon. At the beginning of combat on your turn, target creature you control gets +X/+0 until end of turn, where X is Brambleguard Captain's power.
Yeah. This card is excellent. Has the right text in that, like, you're going to cast it first main phase and then get the Valiant trigger before you go to attacks the turn you cast it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a little understated, but I think you're
battle rattle shaman, right?
It's very good. Next up, we've got Mouse Trapper. Two and a white for an uncommon. It's a 3/2 mouse soldier with flash, and it's got Valiant. And whenever that happens, you tap target creature and opponent controls.
Interesting. Why does this have flash?
They don't know that it's coming. You flash it in on their end step, target it, tap down a blocker, crush them.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's like the territorial hammer skull surprise.
I guess so. Yeah, for sure. And lastly, Nettle Guard, one and a white 3/1 mouse soldier with Valiant gets +0/+2 until end of turn. And you can also pay one, sack it to destroy target artifact or enchantment.
Yeah. I mean, this card is nuts, right?
Nuts.
I mean, not squirrels, as in nuts, but powerful. Like, it's going to be unblockable. I mean, there's like the cantripping red +1/+0 draw card for the red-white deck. If you have, for heaven forbid, you have you curve the 1/1 into this, into another 2-drop, and it's attacking as a 4/4 on turn 3.
Is there a combination of cards that could be previewed, like, realistically, that would make us think that red-white isn't going to be the best deck?
They tried. There are a lot of good high toughness things. I just think red white's going to be able to mow through them.
It just looks like
a lot of them are 2/4 reaches or 2/4 flyers. Uh-huh. And I really think you need to get up to 5 to feel safe blocking a mouse, which is wild. Mm-hmm. But it's tough. My gut says red white's the best deck going in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
I guess red green was the best deck.
Yeah.
In MH3. All right, some cards that want to be Valiant. We've got Flowerfoot Swordmaster. This is white for a 1/2 at uncommon. It's got offspring 2, and it's got Valiant. Mice you control get +1/+0 until end of turn.
This is awesome.
Yeah, this card is very scary, especially with Mabel's whatever, like pumping this, pumping the offspring, your team gets +2/+0. Like,
so you're talking about, so you're saying you do this because our, you know, for our listeners who aren't like as entrenched, really break this down. So we have like this, you play the offspring, so now you have this as a 1/2 and a copy
a one,
of it.
A 1/1 copy of it.
As a 1/1 copy of it with also the Valiant trigger. And then you have the trick that says +2/+2 to something and then +1/+1 to something else. And you target these two, and now all of your mice are getting +2/+0. So each of these are getting +2/+0.
Plus all your other creatures, yeah.
No, just mice. Just mice.
Just mice, yeah. So you can't go nuts with this in rabbits. All right, yeah. That's good. That's safe, at least.
Yeah. This is feeling very like an on-rails draft format to me. And maybe it's coming off the heels of MH3, but this is feeling like very... Get in the lane, like... The lane does its thing. Get in the lane. Do it. Like, I don't think we're going to have a lot of blue-black. Sometimes, like, can be draw three, but sometimes it's reanimator or whatever.
Well,
like,
sure,
I think you're just going to be doing the thing with the cards.
Well, certainly with red-white, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that takes us on to some rabbits, which want to go wide. First up, we've got Hop to It, 2 and a white for an uncommon sorcery. Make 3/1/1 white rabbit creature tokens.
That seems just... bread and butter perfect, but like the question is like, I guess red white is probably gonna want that too, maybe,
probably not.
Like, that's what I'm wondering, like, are these just a lot of secret gold cards?
It certainly seems like it. I mean, like, that's what I was saying, where I couldn't tell if it was, it's hard to tell if it was MH3 light or Corset Plus, and my gut right now says Corset Plus, where like Hop to It goes in green white.
Right.
Like, that's my guess, but we haven't seen the whole set yet, so I think time will tell.
And we also have Harvest Right Host, which is 2 and a white for a 3/3 rabbit citizen at uncommon. And when it or another rabbit you control enters, target creature you control gets +1/+0 until end of turn. Then you draw a card if this is the second time this ability is resolved this turn.
Card's powerful. That's a reason to be green-white for sure.
For sure, yeah.
Next week, you got Life Total Changes. Got a couple different cards here to look at. The first one is Life Creed Duo. This is 1 and a white for a 1/2 flyer at common. It says whenever another creature you control enters, you gain 1 life.
I think this is going to be really key for black white.
Just as a way to enable all of your other stuff, like that every creature now says, turn on all your synergies.
Yeah.
It's understated, like, because it's not really intrinsically worth a card itself, really.
It's understated. It does have flying, though. Like, I agree with you. Like, 2 mana 1/2 flyer is not worth a card. But, like, 2 mana 1/2 flyer gain 3 or 4 life and
trigger synergies. Yeah, I agree. This is going to be important.
But this feels like another kind of card, in theory, that, like, only one deck wants, and you'll probably be able to get it late.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, no other deck than black white wants to play this card, I would think.
Yes.
Next, we have Star Charter, 3 and a white for a 3/1 flyer. 4 mana 3/1 flyer. Very understated there. At the beginning of your end step, if you gained or lost life this turn, look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card with power 3 or less from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
I mean, it's a great card advantage engine for a bat deck. You can trigger it the turn that it comes down. Checks a lot of boxes.
Right. Yeah.
Next up is Moonstone Harbinger, which is 2 and a black for an uncommon 1/3 bat with flying and death touch. Whenever you gain or lose life during your turn, bats you control get +1/+0 and gain death touch until end of turn. This ability triggers only once each turn. So already we're seeing, you know, potentially your Life Creed Duo as the 1/2 gain a life on some of the ETBs. You chain that into the Harbinger, then it's attacking as a 2/2. So, yeah, love the bat synergies that are going on.
And there's Starlit Soothsayer. It's a 2 and a black for a 2/2 flyer at common, bat cleric. At the beginning of your end step, if you gained or lost life this turn, surveil 1. And surveil is, like, pretty important for threshold and forage. Not that, like, I expect this card to largely be filler no matter where it ends up. But, like, I was trying to think about all the surveil stuff and figuring out, like, how you can, like, whatever, looking at it in the context of the format, and turning on forage is big game, I think.
Yeah, but it'll be very hard to have like a hybrid bats.
No, that's what I'm saying. Deck. I'm not saying like, yeah, I'm not saying put this in your squirrel deck. I also don't think this is particularly juicy in bats.
Yeah.
But like, I think the whatever the A plus B of Forage or Threshold is, I think, going to be a little, you might have to dig a little deeper than just like the A plus B of stuff that cares about gaining or losing life in a turn, etc.
Yeah, we've got some just good old classic French vanilla cards that are coming back, which is a breath of fresh air, honestly, after all the wordiness of many recent sets. So first up, we've got Brightblade Stoat. This is one and a white for a 2/2 uncommon. It's got first strike and lifelink.
It's nice, a
clean
weasel.
Magic the Gathering card. It's a weasel. Belongs nowhere. It's homeless.
It's a homeless card. Yeah, 2/2 first strike, lifelink. That, I mean, the fact that there's lifelink, and I mean, I haven't seen much of it other than the Stoat, but lifelink in the life change decks, like, what a, that's just an easy way to turn that
and
on.
And it's got first strike too, so it'll trigger before everything else does. Ooh, love it.
And then I don't know if you can even really call this French vanilla, but this is Shrike Force, 2 and a white, 1/3 uncommon bird knight. It has flying, double strike, and vigilance. We're approaching,
you call that French vanilla?
We're approaching keyword soup here.
French vanilla with some foam latte on top and some
exactly
hazelnut sprinkled in.
right.
We've also got a Cycle of Elementals, which are like the uber predators on the Bloomborough world here. So first up, we've got Drift Gloom Coyote. This is 3 white-white for an uncommon. It's a 3/4 elemental. And whenever it enters, exile target creature an opponent controls until this leaves the battlefield. If the creature exiled had power 2 or less, put a +1/+1 counter on Drift Gloom Coyote.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, these are all
like
just
a giant, you know, whatever they're called, Oblivion Ring on a stick.
Yeah, right. Look what they did to Colossal Dreadmaw, Ben. Galewind Moose, 4 green-green for a 6/6 elemental elk with flash, vigilance, reach, and trample.
It's a card. Pour one out for Colossal Dreadmaw.
This card is absolutely massive and backbreaking.
You just can't attack it to 6 open mana ever if 2 of them are green in the format.
Right. But like, and the thing is like, even if you don't attack into it, what are you doing? Like, then that you go like, oh, I guess I'm not going to attack. Playing around your Galewind Moose, and your opponent's like, cool, cast it anyway. You're about to die. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very strong card. Next, we've got Quake Tusk Boar, which is 3 red-red for a 5/5 elemental with reach, trample, and haste.
Yeah. Charging Monster Sword.
Also great. I'm attacking into it. I attacked into the giant glowing bow and arrow on Arena the other day.
It's not
my finest moment.
Oh, no. And it looks like green gets 2 of them. I'm not sure if this is a cycle, right? This is Hive Spine Wolverine, 3 green-green for a 5/4 elemental Wolverine. When it enters, you choose one. You can either put a counter on target creature you control. It fights target creature token or destroy target artifact or enchantment.
Yeah, maybe not a cycle, but all powerful cards.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, taking a look at some frogs wanting to blink some stuff. We've got Long River Lurker. This is 2 and a blue for an uncommon 2/3 frog with ward 1, and it gives all your other frogs ward 1. Whenever it enters, target creature you control can't be blocked this turn, and whenever that creature deals combat damage, you are allowed to blink it, exile it, and return it to the battlefield.
Huh. Okay. And we also have Splash Lasher. 3 and a blue for a 3/3 with offspring 1 and a blue. When it enters, tap up to 1 target creature and put a stun counter on it. Oh, okay, so 4 mana 3/3, tap a thing, keep it tapped, or 6 mana 3/3 and a 1/1, tap 2 things, keep them tapped.
It's
and I just realized
when this makes its offspring.
I just realized, I mean, not that you're like getting a 2-for-1 because, you know, offspring is a 2-for-1 for yourself, but all the stuff that like cares about killing creature tokens. Like, not only are, you know, there's our regular whatever, there's some rabbit tokens floating around, but killing offspring tokens is real.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. This is big. Like, what in Caverns of Ixalan, we had the 4 mana 3/3 in blue that did this. If you had an artifact, you got to tap a thing, keep it tapped. And that was like, that was really good.
Yeah, I mean, this being a 3/3 as a beater, and the 6 mana, it's going to be game warping. Plus, it's going to be super annoying to loop this with the blink stuff. Like, if you do it, attack, blink it on your end step, keep another thing locked down. Like, this is a pretty oppressive Magic the Gathering card.
Yeah.
I would say a pull into frogs for sure.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Takes us on to Spells Matter. First up, we've got Otter Sport, which is 1 and a blue for an uncommon sorcery. It lets you create a 1/1 blue and red otter creature token with prowess. And then if the spell was cast from anywhere other than your hand, you put a +1/+1 counter on that creature. And conveniently enough, to enable that text, it has flashback for 3 and a blue. So this is going to be really important as a hybrid split spell, but also keeping your creature count high.
Yeah, I really like that card. Next, we have Pearl of Wisdom, 2 and a blue for a sorcery. Draw 2 cards, but it costs 1 less to cast if you control an otter.
Yeah, again, another powerful card that presumably not a ton of other decks are going to want.
That's what I would think, yeah.
We've got Coruscation Mage next. 1 and a red for a 2/2 at uncommon. It's an otter, and it's got Offspring 2. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this creature deals 1 damage to each opponent.
Oh, man. You're not excited about the otter deck?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'll be drafting otters a lot.
This is cool.
I just meant purely on the back of the common and the uncommon as we were checking them out. But I'm sure I'm going to be drafting blue-red, let's be honest.
I love a 3-mana 1/4, and here we have one in Harnesser of Storms. It's an otter wizard, and whenever you cast a non-creature or otter spell, you may exile the top card of your library until end of turn. You may play that card. This ability triggers only once each turn.
Yeah, some card advantage.
Mm-hmm. Oof. This next one's really good, too.
Yeah. Lastly here, we've got Daring Wave Rider. This is 4 blue-blue for a 4/4 at uncommon. When it ETBs, you may cast target instant or sorcery card with mana value 4 or less from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. If that spell would be put into your graveyard, exile it instead.
Yeah. That card's great. Yeah, I'm hopeful for the blue-red deck.
Oh, the payoffs there certainly make it look like it's getting there as well.
I'm less hopeful. Let's take a look at the threshold payoffs, because there aren't really that many enablers yet. I guess this first one is kind of a split. There's Shoreline Looter, 1 and a blue for a 1/1 rat rogue that can't be blocked. And it has threshold. So it's confusing text, but basically it's a looter. So it deals combat damage, you draw a card, and you discard a card unless you have threshold. So once you hit threshold, this helps you get to threshold. And then once you get there, this is just drawing cards. But like,
presumably it would be long dead by that point, though.
2 mana 1/1 too. Like, I don't know.
There's some cards that punish 1/1s as well.
Oh, really? Okay.
Running around, yeah. All right, next we've got Thought Shucker. This is 1 and a blue for a 1/3 rat, and it's a common. Has threshold, 1 and a blue, put a +1/+1 counter on Thought Shucker and draw a card. Activate only if you got threshold and only once. So you can't just do that. It's one-time deal. It kind of like adapts.
That's like real once per game, right?
Yes. Yeah.
That's so weird. What do we have next? We have Persistent Marsh Stalker. I actually like this card. 1 and a black for a 3/1 rat berserker at uncommon. It gets +1/+0 for each other rat you control. And it has threshold. Whenever you attack with 1 or more rats, you can pay 2 and a black if you have threshold. And if you do, you return Persistent Marsh Stalker from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped and attacking.
It's so weird to me that so many of these cards look aggressive. Like, are you just supposed to force your opponent to trade to try to get to 7? Like
you can't be getting
so
to 7
with itself.
You cannot be getting to 7 just from like trading stuff off.
I agree.
Not how you're going to get there. But like,
but it's so weird to me that the cards are aggressively slanted, because threshold wants the game to go long intrinsically, right, as a mechanic.
Unless there are some just like turbo self mill stuff we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, and there's one of those next. So this is Wix Patrol at uncommon. This is 4 black-black for a 5/3 rat. When it ETBs, you mill 3 cards. Great, gets you halfway there almost. And when you do, target creature and opponent controls gets -X/-X until end of turn, where X is the greatest mana value among cards in your graveyard. But the problem with this is it's just an insane card. So every black deck is going to take this and put it in their deck.
It's not an insane card.
It's really good. It's 6 mana 5. It's Flametongue Kavu.
I know, but like, I mean, there was just it's a master set or whatever, but like Skoa Embermage was not like a high pick.
But put Skoa Embermage in core set plus and it's insane.
Okay.
Right? Like, you got to adjust expectations based on the format.
Well, but also the other thing is that like that always dealt 4 and this isn't guaranteed to do that.
Yeah.
I'm just not like, I don't know, that there's, I'm sure this card is.
Okay, no Kappa, give it a letter grade.
I would give this a C+. No Kappa. I don't think this is a pull into black.
I'm going to be arguing about it. I think I'm giving this a B.
Okay. Something like, because I wrote underneath this, like, after all of those, I'm like, but where are the enablers? I do think, like, Dire Sight is the best one we've seen. This is the 2 and a black sorcery, surveil 2, then draw 2 cards, you lose 2 life. It's a common. So that's just like, if what you're doing with this, like, I don't know how often, like, I love to play like Approach of the Second Sun in Cube. It's like blue white control, and you have Search for Azcanta as your two mana enchantment that like wants you to get to seven cards in your yard, and then it flips. And so I think people make the mistake of like actually treating the Surveil one or whatever on upkeep.
Like sometimes you want to keep the card on top.
It's just like, you're just turbo dumping. And I think Dire Sight's the same thing. Like this is basically just divination. Like I think you're in the decks where you have threshold payoffs, you're just always surveilling two into the bin and then just taking your random two. Well, then that gets you three cards in your yard.
Right, which is also the magic number for Forage also, exactly. which is pretty nice, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Dire Sight's got a real home in the format, potentially.
I think so, too.
All right, we're going to take a look at Forage real quick. There's a couple cards here. We've got Bonecash Overseer, which is black for a 1-1 uncommon squirrel. It's got the ability tap, pay one life, draw a card, activate only if you Forage. So if three or more cards left your graveyard, or if you've sacked a food. So you don't actually have to Forage to do this. You Forage with something else and then get a tap, draw a card. It's really strong.
Oh, I think, what? Really strong? Hold the phone. Okay.
Wait, whoa. Yeah, what? I agree. Hold the phone. You're Mr. Forage over there and you don't like this card?
I liked the signposts. I don't like this card. I don't like a one mana 1/1 that needs me to do. Okay, so what you have to do is have the Forage fodder, a thing that forages. And once that happens, then you get to draw a card.
This is Edgewall Innkeeper, baby.
You are out of your mind. This card is this card is bad. I think this card is bad. I could be wrong about the 6-mana 5/3 Flame Tongue Kavu, whatever. I would put money on this card being bad.
One of my favorite things about preview season is tilting you.
It's so easy. I got to talk to my therapist about this. Next up is Curious Forager, 2 and a green for a 3/2. When it enters, you may forage. When you do, return target permanent card from your graveyard to your hand.
That's very good.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Wait, are you, I got to go back to this other card. Are you saying it's good just to tilt me? Or do you actually
think? No, I actually think it's good. Plus there's the tilt bonus value.
Okay. Okay. At least I know you're somewhat genuine. Okay. Is it time?
I think it's time for Greater Garbage.
We must get to Greater Garbage. Okay, first up, we have, I can't wait to talk to you about this, Bark Form Harvester. 3 mana for a 2/3 artifact creature, Shapeshifter at common. That means it has Changeling. This card is every creature type. It has Reach, and you can pay 2, put target card from your graveyard on the bottom of your library.
It's tough.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb early and say garbage.
I really wish this cost 2 mana.
Well, it can't be a 2-mana.
No, but like 2/3. A 2-mana 2/1, 2-mana 1/3 with reach, whatever. Like,
yeah, I mean, basically you're like, there's also the last line of text really appeals to me as a human being. Like,
oh, but
in what scenario are you ever going to want to put things from your graveyard on the bottom of your library?
Yeah, like, I mean, we haven't seen. Maybe there is some like turbo self-mill stuff that we just haven't seen yet.
But it's also your graveyard. You can't mess with your opponent's graveyard with it.
I mean, that would be nuts if you could disrupt Threshold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, one can dream. I think all told, I think this doesn't do enough. I think this is garbage. And it looks kind of golden egg-ish, but I just don't think it gets there.
And that's because you think that the typal stuff is all sort of secondary. And so the flexibility this gives you of, hey, it's going to be an otter in your otter deck or whatever. Like, I'm not saying you take it early, but I feel like it still is probably going to slot in a lot.
3-mana, 2/3 reach?
I don't like it either.
Then it's garbage.
Then it's garbage. Okay, easy. I'm excited to talk to you about this next cycle of villages. These are uncommon lands that all have different activated abilities.
Yeah, so the white one, we've got Lupin Flower Village, which taps to add a colorless. Taps to add a white that you can only spend to cast a creature spell, and that will be a similar theme throughout. Like, they tap for their color, but you can only spend it to cast a creature spell, and a colorless for anything. And this one has the ability, one white, tap, look at the top 6 cards of your library. You can reveal a bat, bird, mouse, or rabbit card, which is the 4 creature types that white decks touch, and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
You skipped over the crucial text, which is, to do that, you have to sacrifice this land.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just assumed our listeners knew that intrinsically.
Well, there's what I thought after, because I when I was reading the cycle, I read this one first, and I was like, I'm not that crazy about this. And I was like, are they all gonna sacrifice to do their thing? But they don't. Some of them are repeatable, and I'm much more excited about the ones.
Oh, they are.
Yeah,
they're much more than that closely. Then
I'm much more excited about the ones that don't have to sacrifice. I think our takes of recent sets of like these. Like value lands like this just don't really matter that much, especially at the cost of the land. Like, I'm not interested in exchanging this. Plus, like, we should stress, like, this is not a free thing. Like, tapped at colorless or white, but only for creature spells. That's not great.
Like, I mean, that's not ideal. Certainly.
That's not great. That means somewhere from like, a third of your spells this can't cast. It's not great. So I'm gonna say garbage for Lupin Flower Village.
I'm also going garbage for Lupin Flower Village. That's a mouthful.
The blue one is Lily Pad Village, colorless or blue for only creatures, and then you can pay blue, tap, surveil 2, activate only if a bird, frog, otter, or rat entered the battlefield under your control this turn.
That's good. This is my question though.
Yeah.
Because, like, by the rules of the game, we got to give this a great then. But to get outside the rules of the game here for a little bit and have a serious conversation, good enough in the sense that, like, you're going to take Lily Pad Village early and then be assuming you're drafting Blue X? Or is this still in, like, the MDFC range where, like, you find your lane and then you're hoping to pick up a Lily Pad Village after you found your lane?
I think that's more likely.
That's my gut as well. Like, I still don't think any of these are good enough to, like, back in the desert days where you, like,
right.
You got the red desert and you're like, great, I've got red deserts, I'm drafting red. Like, I don't think these lands approach that territory.
Right, so maybe in that sense, all of the lands are garbage?
Garbage. Yeah. That was more the point I wanted to say, was to hammer home our land value lands don't matter that much anymore, but...
But like,
certainly, not all created equal. Lily Pad Village is much better than Lupin Flower Village.
Well, so the black one does what you'd expect, sort of in the sense of the sacrificing world. You can pay one and a black, tap, sack it to return a bat, lizard, rat, or squirrel card from your graveyard to your hand. Again, I'm not super excited about cashing in my land.
But better than the white one.
Better than the white one, for sure. The red one looks really good to me. But again, but ooh, so probably yeah. Garbage. Like... This one
I don't know. That one might be great. So this one has red tap, target lizard, mouse, otter, or raccoon, gains +1/+0, and gains haste until end of turn. That's also triggering Valiant.
Oh, that's, well, okay, this might be great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 2 mana. Like, you're tapping this and you're tapping red to give something +1/+0 in haste. But
from,
like,
a land?
Or from a, like, land, right.
A synergistic land. That is... And also, like, pushing lizards through. And, I think Rockface Village actually might be great.
Wait, and the green one is great, too. Green tap, put a +1/+1 counter on each frog, rabbit, raccoon, or squirrel you controlled that entered the battlefield this turn. Okay, here's what you do. Turn 5, you're going to play the 3 mana make 3 rabbits. And then green.
Village, turn the 2/2s.
Yeah.
I mean, also, as you blink the frogs and they come back, you'll be able to put +1/+1 counters on them.
Yeah. I can't, but like, how many times in a game are you activating Ocala Village, you know, like.
But again, I mean, not totally free, but largely free.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, we're excited about these things, but let's not forget that this is not just a free land. Like, only green for creatures and colorless otherwise is a cost.
I think the ones that don't sacrifice might be great, but and I think the red one might truly be great.
Yeah. Yeah, the red one, I think, is, if I had to give a ranking, that would be my number one right now. But yeah. An interesting cycle, for sure. I'm very excited about this next card. Carrot Cake, 1 and a white for an artifact food. When it enters and when you sacrifice it, create a 1/1 white rabbit creature token and scry 1. And it has the food text of 2 tap, sack it, you gain 3 life. But more importantly, you can forage this. So you can play this. Get a 1/1, forage it, get a 1/1, rectangles. Love it.
But
I think
not
great.
Touching green black, and we've seen no fixing yet. The only thing we've seen is a Shimmering Grotto variant where it's like a land that taps for colorless, and then you can filter mana through it, like 1, tap the land, to change a man into some other color.
I think this is just glue rather than I'm like mad that it's not like in the very hyper, like, so it's whatever. Green white's going to like this because it's making two bodies. Black white's going to like this because it's a way to gain life on your turn. Like, I mean, maybe red white doesn't like it. I don't know.
Blue right,
white.
I'm into these, it.
Like, I think this is just kind of, this has like forbidden friendship glue. This could be golden egg, early golden egg contender for me.
Is that common? Ooh, okay. Yeah. I like it. I just assumed it was an uncommon. All right. Dewdrop Cure is next. 2 and a white for an uncommon sorcery. Has the text gift a card. And you say, return up to 2 target creature cards, each with mana value 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. If the gift was promised, instead you get 3 target creature cards with mana value 2 or less. So you're bandaging up those mice, coming back for more. This card is good.
So good in just red-white, I would
think. Good in just red-white, I think, probably, yes. But very oppressive there, potentially.
Yeah, I could see it. I guess great in red-white.
Like rebuild an army, and like if you're pressuring them enough, you probably don't care about gifting them a card, to be honest.
Right.
It's awkward in the sense that like it's kind of planning to fail with your red white deck.
Right. That's my issue with it.
But it's so good if you do fail. I mean, like, I don't know. I like it. I'm gonna go great here. But that's probably not a high pick. Maybe it's garbage.
I kind of think it's garbage. I generally don't like these kinds of cards. I mean, my terrible take about Lively Dirge from the OTJ preview.
Notwithstanding.
I mean, so I'm predisposed to dislike these cards. That's why I'm trying to check myself, because I was very wrong about Dirge. But like, this just seems.
Well, your whole red white deck is going to be 1 and 2 drops. I don't think the mana value thing is going to be an issue.
Really?
Yes. Have you seen the mice casting cost? The deck is going to be blazing fast.
I mean, the signposts are 3 mana and 4 mana. Not that that says anything, but like.
But all the other cards are 1 mana, 2 mana. Like, the mice deck is very frequently going to go 1 mana, 1 drop, 1 drop, 1 drop on best of one arena, I think.
All right. Well, I wouldn't know. We got a reprint here. Runaway Together, 1 and a blue instant. Choose 2 target creatures controlled by different players. Return those creatures to their owner's hand. So notably, this was in OG Eldraine, and notably was very good with Merfolk Secret Keeper, right? Because you would adventure it, cast it. And so it was like really good in the mill deck. And then you got to rebuy it to keep milling 4. I assume this will still be pretty good.
This card just plays. I think it's very hard. Like, great, but not a high pick. Like, you maybe want a copy or 2. Mm-hmm. Probably will be at its best in Frogs. Like, you'll be able to pick your thing up, re-trigger ETBs. I like this card.
Yeah, I do too.
Next up is Downwind Ambusher. This is 3 and a black for a 4/2 with flash at uncommon. It's a skunk, so no relevant creature types. Did you know I was in Tennessee this past weekend? They were telling me that people have skunks as pets fairly frequently in Tennessee, like, and have their sprayers.
Have they heard of, do they know that like dogs exist? That, like, you could just have a dog as a pet instead?
My mind was blown. I can't imagine making that choice. Anyway, Skunk Assassin, Downwind Ambusher. When ETBs, target creature and opponent controls gets -1/-1 until end of turn. Pour one out for my Village Innkeeper. And you can also destroy target creature and opponent controls that was dealt damage this turn. Adding the text of giving something -1/-1 makes this card really good, I think. I'm going great, Downwind Ambusher.
I'm really mad that this doesn't have... This looks like it has flying. I know it's just jumping.
It's a skunk. Skunks don't fly.
Oh, yeah. Skunks could never fly. That doesn't make sense. You're just, like, they can make whatever fly. It's magic.
I guess.
Great.
Great. I think the fact that this can shrink, sticking a 4/2 killing a thing in combat because you stuck a 4/2 is really strong if you make that happen.
And killing X1s. All right, I'll go great.
I'm going to pick off those 2/1 mice. Like, I think this is good.
I'm into it. I'm also into this next card, Husk Burster Swarm. Oh, this is the element, the black elemental. 7 and a black, 6/6. It's an elemental insect, an uncommon. It has menace and death touch, and it costs 1 less to cast for each creature card you own in exile and in your graveyard. So you're not punished. Like there is that threshold and forage tension, but you're not punished for that here. If you foraged stuff away, it can still reduce the cost.
So you're going great here, huh?
I'm going great.
I think I'm going great also. Like, this is actually kind of like almost a synergy payoff for foraging and dumping, filling your graveyard up.
Right. I mean, like, once this costs five, like, that's a huge deal. So, like, you reduce this by three. This is really hard to engage with profitably.
Interesting that the other elementals all just kind of are powerful cards. And this is a powerful card that's synergistic. Like, it has a lower floor, but a much higher ceiling than some of the other elementals.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we've got Ruthless Negotiation. This is black for an uncommon sorcery. Target opponent exiles a card from their hand. If this spell was cast from a graveyard, draw a card, and it's got flashback for four and a black.
I really want to like this card. Like, am I allowed to like this? Okay.
I think so. I mean, probably makes us bad, but you're going to trade one for one up front, put this in your graveyard, and then later in the game, you cash it in for an intimidation campaign trigger. Plus, you've also got the chance to self-mill this.
Right, that's what I'm more excited about is, like, I want to surveil this into my bin, or I want to self-mill this, and, like, then it's just free
this
value.
This card's great. I think if those decks have any legs at all, you're going to want copies of Ruthless Negotiation in them.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Next, we have Stargaze, X black black for a sorcery. Look at twice X cards from the top of your library. Put X cards from among them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. You lose X life.
This is an interesting one.
So four mana, look at four cards.
No. Oh, yeah. Four mana, look at four.
Put two into your hand and two into your bin. Lose two life.
It's like a bad Dire Sight at four mana. It's just like paying one more for a Dire
Sight. But like, put it at the top of your curve. Look at eight cards. But the lose four life, that's a chunk.
It's a chunk of life.
But I, in like black, I don't know, maybe this is kind of good. My gut is to just call this garbage and not work so hard to think about it. But like, if you've got some ways to gain life, that's...
If you're stable and you cast this for six mana, the game is over.
Yeah. Look at six cards. You cast for six mana. Look at eight cards. Pick four. Bin four. Lose four.
It is powerful.
Yeah. But it's just like the gap between floor and ceiling could not be higher, right?
Higher. Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah, a very situational card. Like, I think you're going to have to be very intentional about doing the thing. But I think in a deck that is a true control deck, this is a win condition level card. But the nice thing is, I don't think you're going to have to pick it that highly. Can we give a situationally great?
But it's also situationally garbage.
It's also situationally garbage. That is true.
I think it is not
a great threshold
enabler.
Yeah, threshold enabler or a great forage enabler.
No.
Like, it's a very specific card.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great, like, what you're talking about for like a control deck, if you're stable, this is like so powerful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Losing four life is still scary. I think all told, I'm going to say garbage.
Me too. Next up, we have Might of
garbage
the Meat.
Garbage with potential. Those raccoons are going to be finding treasure in there.
Next up, we have Might of the Meek. It's single red for an instant. Target creature gains trample until end of turn. It also gets +1/+0 until end of turn if you control a mouse and you draw a card. This is just bread and butter for the Valiant deck, right?
It's got to be great.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is great.
Not even Valiant for the spells deck, too. A cantripping red card.
Yeah.
This is at the intersection of a lot of things that both
at two things.
Mice and spells. Well, sure, but I'm pretty pumped about Jeskai.
Yeah, yeah.
Assuming there's any mana fixing at all on this godforsaken format. Next up, we've got Cash Grab. One in a green, common, instant, mill four cards. You may put a permanent from among the cards milled this way into your hand. If you control a squirrel or return a squirrel to your hand this way, create a food token.
Great. Big G great. This is great. Oh my god, you have to get over your dislike of Malevolent Rumble. This card is great. We've been just talking about, like, how do you enable Threshold? How do you enable the forage stuff? This is it, baby.
I know it is. But it's only green-black, right?
No.
This is not blanket great. This is only green-black great. Like, you can't just be first picking cash grabs and, like, assume you're going to be able to force your way into teamer squirrels. Like, this is, I think similarly, this is to some of the other cards we've talked about. I think this card is very important for squirrels, but truly no other deck other than squirrels should want this card. And if that's the case, then it's maybe even greater because it's a great card that you can get a little later.
It's
I do agree.
This will enable your expend stuff, right? This is a 2-mana play. Get back a 2-drop. Boom, baby.
Boom, baby. You expended 4. That's just casting Magic the Gathering cards.
Yes.
Yeah. It's going to enable expend 4. Yeah, that's how the mechanic works.
Boom, baby.
Any boom, baby. I guess because this replaces itself. It's slightly better at expending.
Yeah.
I agree. This card is great.
Okay.
I just think people are going to overrate it a little bit because they're all hot and bothered about Malevolent Rumble.
You can give people a little bit more credit.
This is basically a green, black, gold card. That's my take.
I think that's fair. Whereas
Malevolent Rumble was a green card. This is a great green, black, gold card. I'm sure the data is going to have it as the highest game in hand. Hate my life. All right, next run. Clifftop, well,
that's
Lookout.
Great because that means green black is going to be a good deck, which is fun.
That is great. That is great for the format. You're right. There's no chance it's that high. Red white's going to dominate game in hand win rate. All right. Clifftop Lookout, 2 and a green for an uncommon 1/2 frog scout with reach. When this enters, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a land card. Put that card on the battlefield tapped and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
Guaranteed land.
Guaranteed land.
Guaranteed ramp. And
guaranteed ramp.
Really good blink target.
Really good blink card and a body. This card is great. I just like I had a moment where I was like, oh, this can't search. This is terrible. And then I was like, wait. No. This is still a very good card.
Right. So it's right. Your point is important is that this is not fixing.
Not fixing.
This is only ramp.
But I initially dismissed it because it wasn't fixing on my first read. And then I was like, whoa, slow down. Yeah. This card is actually great. It is just not what you want it to be or what this type of card usually is.
Right. Yeah, I feel like, but again, like how many times is every card in the set just like, well, this is just a secret blue-green gold card? Like,
no, every green deck's playing this.
Every green deck wants this, yeah.
It's a body plus... Ramp.
Well, maybe expend doesn't because it's 3 mana, but it gets you to your 4th mana.
Gets you to your fourth
then
mana.
Then you can use to expend.
Yes.
The expend puzzle. I'm kind of turning around on it. I like.
I think it's a puzzle.
It's a puzzle. Yeah. Wait. No. Hold on. It is a puzzle. 2+2 or 3+1. It's a puzzle.
It's a puzzle.
It's tricky. It.
Next up, Overprotect. This is 1 and a green for an uncommon instant. Target creature you control gets +3/+3, gains trample, hexproof, and indestructible until end of turn.
This is great.
Say the word.
Great.
No, it's garbage.
In what world?
It's a combat trick. It just doesn't. That's fine. This is not great. +2 mana.
+3/+3 and trample. Like I don't need, you're docking this for having like too much words on it. +3/+3 and trample for 2 mana is just great.
It's just great.
Like it's run amok, but you can cast it on a blocker if you have to. And then it also does this other stuff. It's great.
All right, fine. It's
great. Sorry.
What grade are you giving it?
What grade am I giving it? I don't know. It's great. It's a C. A C plus, probably.
C plus.
Yeah.
Yeah. C plus feels right.
+3/+3 and trample is just very good. Waxwane Witness is next. 3 and a white for a 2/4 bat cleric with flying and vigilance. And whenever you gain or lose life during your turn, it gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
This card is great. You're not seeing it? The sun-crested pterodon vibes? The chicken?
Yeah, but that was like, that's a lifetime ago, Ben.
That's when we started the podcast.
That's when we started the podcast. Like, I don't know if this... there are two wolves inside of me right now. And one wolf thinks this card is awesome. And another wolf thinks it's 2024 and that this card is just replacement level.
Yeah. It's hard. I really want to like this card.
I can see the world where like this is like top of the 17 lands charts or whatever. Like that this is just like a brick wall and so good. But I can also see the world where like it's fine.
It's 4 mana. It's 4 mana. Not that good. It's flying, probably garbage.
Flying vigilance is nothing to sneeze at. It's hard to get through.
Yeah. I really want this card to be great. I'm going to be really happy if this card's great.
It's like I think I need to see the whole set to have more of a stance on it, because I definitely could see us doing our top 3 commons next week and going like, and this being there.
It can't be, right? Like, what are you going to do? You're going to tap out on four, play this as a blocker, and the red-white deck is going to attack all of you.
And you go...
And you're going to, like, great, block, use your combat trick, right? I think this is probably garbage.
I think this is garbage. That's what I think, yeah.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Yeah.
All right, lastly here, we've got Night Fisher. 3 blue-blue for a 4/5 flying. It's a bird, uncommon. Whenever another non-token bird you control enters, make a 1/1 blue fish creature token. Those birds are getting supper.
Is it time to pour one out? Do you have your beverage?
For air elementals?
Pour one out for air elemental. 5 mana, 4/5 flyer with upside.
Holy cow, power creep.
This card is great.
This card is great. I just
like, and I love just, to, I love to
take a moment of silence for air elemental when I saw this card.
To say that 5-drops are garbage, but this is, I'll make an exception for a 5-mana 4/5 flyer that makes 1/1s.
Card's good. All right. Takes on the format?
I mean, I am very predisposed to want green-black to be good. Food tokens, rectangles, foraging. It's all, that's why I'm a, I guess, I, you know, to bring us back to the beginning, I guess I'm a squirrel. I think a squirrel You're seems a squirrel? Right. Squirrel seems a little right to me. A little skittish.
On that note, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com. Once the full set is out, you can find our tier list there, as well as a backlog of all of our other tier lists. Speaking of backlogs, all of our episodes are there. There's a link also to our other various content via our Twitch streams, our YouTube channel. You can find more information about our Patreon there. All of that is at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.